start the meeting. Senator Kelly is on his way. Presently, we have Senator Phillips and myself, Senator Sharp. We'll be getting a briefing on the last railroad issues before us today. But before we get into that, I'd like to bring up SJR 18 for committee consideration, and which is the constitutional amendment creating a dedicated fund for transportation and facilities. And we drafted a committee substitute that's in the members' folders, and there's a few available back in the back in case anyone wants to see. The only change is in the CS, and which is supported by the administration, was under section 2 of the resolution page of the resolution, which is page 2, line 13 of the original bill. It deletes the wording "and enforcement" on section 2. So, in other words, section 2, item 3, line
13
did read the administration and enforcement of motor vehicle laws. The CS says the administration of motor vehicle laws. Senator Phillips, you had some comments you wanted to make on this?
Yeah. Commissioner Turpin?
Yeah.
I have a question, a couple questions.
Commissioner, could you?
Oh, that's right. Okay. This is Randy Phillips here. I have a couple questions, Commissioner. I notice one thing here that should this pass, the legislature is going to go on the ballot. There's no fiscal note from the divisional elections on this, so I would suggest that we get a fiscal note on that. And you'll probably find it's going to be between $2,000 and $4,000. Since this is going to go on the ballot, it's going to cost money to print. And
we can do that. It would be a very small cost.
Right. I know it's the administration put a fiscal note on one of my constitutional amendments. I want to have the rule apply to everybody equally. I don't have any problems with the constitutional amendment in concept. I have one other question. This is just going to go into one fund called the transportation fund, right? And if aircraft, road service, and watercraft taxes and fees all go into this one fund.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman, Senator Phillips. It is one fund, but the bill restricts how that money can be spent. The legislature, of course, appropriates it, but then it must appropriate it to the mode in which it's collected.
Okay, that's the question I have.
Any other questions? Any other questions from any other committee members on SJR? Let's see. Would you like to move to the CS so we can talk about it?
Mr. Chairman, I move SJR 18 as amended, transportation, for the CS. And I also might add that we should have that other fiscal note from division elections sent on to the next committee referral, which is
Judiciary.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to vote for this bill when it gets to the floor, but I don't object to it moving that committee.
This is America.
Very good.
Vote any way you want.
My intention is to move it out today with individual recommendations if we can get a motion.
I just moved it.
You did so move?
Yes, so moved.
If there's no objections, CS for Senate Joint Resolution number 18, transportation, and we'll move out of committee with individual recommendations.
I presume, Frank, you guys supported it?
Yes, we support it. I need to work on you a little bit, so you forget it.
You got some work to do there, Frank. With that,
use a diamond.
We'll. One other thing, Commissioner.
Yes.
Could I ask one more question, just to get it on the record, on a concern I've talked with you about it several days ago. But on the second page under item realizing we've already moved it out, but on line 7, item 1, it talks about the maintenance and operation of a state or local government transportation facility if the facility is related to the mode of transportation from which the tax, license, or fee, and so forth. I just wanted, and we go on to talk in item 2 about Harborsdown. I just wanted to get on the record that item 1 does include, among all other facilities, also harbors as far as maintenance.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, this gives the legislature the option of using the money collected from the marine fuel tax either as maintenance or as construction. And the reason for that is we collect far more money than we spend a day on maintenance in the marine tax. And I think that it probably would be desirable to use that money to expand or build more harbors rather than just to maintain.
Very good. I just want to make sure that the intent was clear on item 1, that that included harbors for maintenance also, since we're going on the second item and talk about harbors on construction and improvements. So I thank you for that clarification. Okay. With that, I would like to proceed on to the Alaska Railroad portion of our hearing. And I would ask that Robert Hatfield, Alaska Railroad, be seated and introduce anyone else that's with him. And what we'd like is an overview on the railroad and its five-year projection on improvements and utilization of the plan and other plans that you may have that we can talk with you about. Proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. With me here today is Chairman of the Board, Mr. Lauren Lounsbury, and also Director, Commissioner of Transportation, Mr. Frank Turpin, and Mark Hickey, who is our legislative representative here in Anchorage, and also from the Alaska Railroad. I'm happy to say that are here Mr. Tony Tabor, Gary Wilson, Wes Rogers, and Bob Casey. There he is. And Bob Casey, who each represent our labor organizations on the Alaska Railroad Corporation property. Do I have to continue to press this down, or is
flip
it?
You got the switch right there. Okay. Flip it up.
All right. Thank you. If I may, I thought what I would do first is give a brief overview of the Alaska Railroad Corporation as it exists today, and then I will go through in as much detail as you'd care to have our capital program for a brief review of 1992 and then on for 93 and the years beyond. I will endeavor to keep it as interesting as I possibly can. It's some of it's very dry, but nevertheless, and I would be happy to answer questions as we go along.
Very good. I'll point out that we, on teleconference, we have listening in Soldotna, Anchorage, and Fairbanks.
Okay, fine. The Alaska Railroad Corporation today has a little under 530 permanent employees. None of them, of course, are state employees. We have a separate pension plan. We have a separate benefit package. And that is a situation that, at least under current scenario, we foresee for the future. Our freight revenues for 1992 were just over $52 million. Our passenger revenues were about $8.5 million. And our real estate revenue was right at just a little bit over $4 million. In 1992, we handled roughly 500 million gallons of petroleum products, refined petroleum products, most of that for MAPCO between the North Pole refinery and Anchorage. We also handled 1.5 million tons of coal, about half of that for export to Korea, the other half for local consumption in the Fairbanks area. We handled about 12,000 trailers. 4,000 of those came from the lower 48 on Alaska Hydrotrain barges. The remainder arrived or were handled intrastate between Anchorage and Fairbanks. Some obviously came in from the lower 48 on Sealand and towed as well and exited that way. We also handle about 5 million board feet of timber, which is a bright side. That's a growing area for us. a couple of million tons of gravel and a host of machinery for interstate moves. The passenger count for last year was just under 475,000 passengers, which makes us one of the largest passenger operations in North America, and we are pleased that we are approaching, but we're not there yet, we're approaching breaking even in that business. We did all of that, of course, without direct state subsidy. We also spent just under $13 million on capital projects. Those capital projects came in the form of about 114,000 feet of new rail, about 14,700 ties were replaced. We put 65,000 cubic yards of new ballast into the track and resurfaced 164 miles of track. In addition to that, we rebuilt 8 locomotives. We did something a little unique this year. We rebuilt 3 of those, I think it was, in Fairbanks, which is something we hadn't done before. We did the PACO work, or the power assembly work in Fairbanks. That to make up for a slow start that we had at the beginning of the year because of a fuel contamination problem we had. We bought 2 more locomotives. They were new to us. They were used. They are switch engines that we're very happy to have in our fleet. We started a motor vehicle upgrade program. We purchased a new mainframe computer. And while we were doing all of that, we had a very high level of on-time performance. In some months, it reached, approached 90, or actually it was over 90%. We moved into a new headquarters building. We implemented our renegotiated labor agreements. We participated in a joint venture that opened a hotel at the Ship Creek. We executed a master lease that will allow a comprehensive development of our real estate property in Anchorage. We quietly reduced 22 positions, permanent positions in administrative area, though our summer peak employment was up just over 700, which is more than we've had in recent memory. We also we did all of that, and we intend to do very much the same thing in 1993, with some exceptions. The reason that we do all of that is because it's a highly competitive world for us in the transportation business. Initially, when I came up here, I thought that we wouldn't be looking over our collective shoulder at something like the Santa Fe or the UP or somebody else breathing down our neck. But I find that we have a much more pernicious form of competition, largely in the form of modal competition, different modes of transportation, or source competition. I mentioned that we handle about 500 million gallons of refined petroleum products. When you've got numbers such as that, those numbers suggest the possibility of a pipeline. And there is a rumor that that MAPCO may be considering that very thing. We also, of course, our interline business, that which comes up from the lower 48 via Seattle and Prince Rupert on rail barge, is competitive with Tote and Sealand, who also happen to be 2 of our customers. The source competition is largely involves coal export. And coal export, as many of you I know are aware, is becoming more and more difficult as the days go by. Though the projections for the future of coal consumption on the Pacific Rim for the future are very bright, they're very good. Right now, there is a real glut of coal on the market. The South African coal, which has not been available in the recent past because of sanctions against South Africa, is now available, and they are marketing that in a very big way. Indonesia is a relatively new player in the market. Korean investment of roughly $100 million has created an infrastructure that has allowed spot market coal to be available at very low prices. The Australians have enormous quantities of coal that they are making available to the market, and actually they and the Japanese, as many of you know, set the price. Along with that, we have coal exported through the West Coast ports of the lower 48 and Canada, all of which affects our ability to sell the coal that, well, we don't sell it, obviously, but all of it, it's a state issue. It does affect the ability for the coal from Healy to remain competitive in the global market. It's a year-to-year proposition at the moment. As the air freight business develops, air freight infrastructure develops in Anchorage, that will begin to nibble away at the fringes of our business as the infrastructure is built. And there's always this beast called incremental freight. There always seems to be room on every train for one more car, room on every truck for one more box, or in this instance, perhaps room on an airplane for another bag of groceries. And this is something, though it's not significant at the moment, and it's absolutely appropriate that that Anchorage and Fairbanks both develop very sophisticated air cargo businesses and distribution. It will affect freight and goods coming to Alaska. Of course, we compete with cruise lines for rail freight traffic, even though they are customers of ours. We have two separate constituencies that we serve in many respects. Our group is largely younger, independent travelers. Theirs are largely older and organized travelers. Nevertheless, as our service is improving, we are beginning to nibble away at the edges of their operations. They, in turn, of course, are nibbling away at ours. And, of course, in our real estate activities, there are a host of developers out there with land that are ready, willing, and able to participate in assisting somebody in developing their real estate. I thought that the best way to approach this, if I may, and we will, again, I will endeavor to keep it interesting, is to say a little bit about what the corporate mission of the Alaska Railroad Corporation, what it is, and also the values by which we operate. It bears repeating. The mission of the Alaska Railroad Corporation and its employees is to provide high-quality, safe, cost-effective freight, passenger, and real estate services to our customers. And our value statements, which is how we intend to get this done, is that service to our customers is our ultimate goal. Safety is the essence of all we do, and that is a very important tenet in the railroad and any transportation company, but the railroad industry in particular. Safety does and must become a religion on the property. Pride and integrity must be visible. That is in all of us, whether we are in management or not. Quality is the measure of our work, doing things the first time correctly. And teamwork is essential. Now, all of that may seem very elemental, but when you have a job to do that involves people working around the clock 365 days a year, making sure that everybody understands what the mission is and how we're going to get it done is exceedingly important. I will briefly go over the economic assumptions that we have made in developing our forecast. They are relatively self-evident. We consider the economy to remain roughly flat through the planning period. We do not think that we do not have in our planning horizon an opening of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge for exploration. We also don't have in our planning horizon a gas pipeline being built from Canada through Fairbanks and down the rail belt. We may tinker with that. In any event, we do see net employment in the current exploration and oil field activities to reduce over the next few years with perhaps no commensurate offset. As far as our passenger business is concerned, we will continue to have growth in that area. We are encouraged by the response from our cruise line partners to the opportunity to run passenger trains between Seward and Anchorage in support of their newly relocated operations to Seward. We took a bit of a hit. As you can imagine, the Whittier shuttle, which is marginal annualized to begin with, will not have nearly as high a ridership this year as it has in the past, simply because of the goods and the workers from the cruise lines and all the rest going in and out of Whittier. Hopefully, we will be able to partially offset that loss through the implementation of a passenger train service for cruise lines on our equipment, which is new, between Seward and Anchorage. We already have a deal in principle with one cruise line, and when I left Anchorage yesterday, we were very close to closing up one with the other. That has some real positive aspects to it. A brief commercial, if you haven't taken that trip between Portage and Seward on the rail, I highly recommend it. It's one of the premier trips in the world.
If I can interject 1 minute here.
Yeah.
How were they getting their passengers to Anchorage prior to your deal?
There were two ways, depending upon which outfit you were talking about. We would meet the passenger trains in Whittier, meet the passenger ships in Whittier with a train that consisted of passenger cars that were quite rudimentary, actually, that were owned by Princess Cruise Lines. So we had a hook-and-haul arrangement with them. A similar situation existed with Regency, who used their equipment. The other cruise lines brought their buses down there and loaded them up on the shuttle and we brought them out on the flat cars in buses.
And you're making your deal with the cruise lines?
That's right.
Mr. Knight?
At this time, I'd like to indicate that Senator Lincoln has joined us several minutes ago.
And I got to leave. I have a military affairs subcommittee to go to.
Okay.
15 minutes ago.
See.
Okay. As far as real estate is concerned, the real estate related projects, we think tourist related real estate projects, we think are a real bright spot on the future. And that verbiage there is self-evident. I'm sure we'll get a chance to talk about that a little bit here in the future. Our goals and assumptions, I will skip some but highlight some others. The commitment of $10 million a year in capital improvements for track and related operating requirements and $1 million a year to real estate improvements is something we intend to do over the planning period. We intend to control our general administrative costs in a very significant manner as well. We, as far as the physical plan is concerned, we do not anticipate financing any rail expansion during the planning period. We will be replacing major equipment, including locomotives, rail cars, on-track equipment, and other maintenance equipment as necessary. The projecting funding levels, however, and this is important to note, the projected funding levels do not support, in all cases, a normalized replacement program on some segments of track and equipment that we have on the railroad. We will continue our mitigation of OSHA and safety-related items, and we will continue the practice of analyzing all buildings and replace only those that are absolutely necessary. The revenue assumptions, I think, have largely been addressed previously. The I will cite here, however, one thing that I think may come up with this group, and that is that there may be a realignment of the Alaska Railroad Corporation's water carrier arrangements during the planning period. We will continue our quality management practices, and in the fourth year of the planning period, we will undergo our next round of labor negotiations. And also another important point, the operations will be performed as much as possible by permanent full-time corporate employees, except on those traditional summer support programs that are done through contract. The general influences, this plan assumes the corporation will remain under state ownership during the planning period. We will continue to pursue cost-effective solutions for environmental problems. We will devote more resources to meeting customer demands and expectations. And we will continue to monitor and meet the challenge of the competitive environment it finds itself in and pursue new and potentially high revenue services wherever possible. I think if I would ask you to turn to the five-year plan financial results and just have that before you, as I think the easiest thing for me to do rather than to drone on and talk about numbers, which unless you would care to go through it in that manner, I thought what I would do is try to represent to you what we are trying to accomplish on the property over the next 5 years. Is that acceptable to you, Mr. Chairman? I've got, for those of you listening at home, I've got some charts that I will endeavor to describe while going through this. I think the first thing I will do, this is a blown-up page of the Alaska Railroad timetable for the railroad between Anchorage.
I wonder if you could put that out here so we could all see that.
Okay, I'm sorry. So we can all see it.
Just
see
in front.
Very good, Mark. Excellent. He's a project. What I'm trying, there are two ways to increase the efficiency on a railroad line. The first is to increase the speed of the track, which is terribly expensive. It requires enormous investment to take the speed of the track from its current maximum authorized speed of 49 miles an hour for freight and 59 miles an hour to passenger. Up beyond that, it would require investment in signaling and lots of other things. There's another thing you can do, and that is to improve the quality of, or the efficiency of the line itself by extending sidings or building new sidings in strategic locations. This past year, we did significant work in upgrading sidings at Honolulu, Gold Creek, and Willow. In the coming years, and this will, of course, these sidings right now, or earlier this year, were not capable of taking all trains. We could not run our heavier trains, the oil trains and the coal trains, into these sidings. Now we can. Over the next 5 years, if this we intend to do all of these sidings, and this is an investment of about roughly $500,000 each year to upgrade these sidings, but as you can see, when we get done, we will have a system that will be quite efficient in that we can meet and pass trains very much at will. What is often difficult to communicate is that if a train goes into a siding, it takes about a half an hour at a minimum just to go in and out of the siding, to slow down, stop, line the switch, go into the siding, wait for the train that was there, and then go on to the next siding. Freight train costs roughly $700 an hour to keep moving. Anytime you can save 10 or 15 minutes on an annualized basis, it comes into big money. This way, we can the trains can operate, get in the clear, and spend less time waiting for other trains. They can advance further down the line. And again, if this is redundant or not what you're looking for, please tell me and I'll change. But this is an important component of how we are going to be able to keep our traffic, to raise our traffic level, particularly in passenger operations, without necessarily having to spend enormous sums of money on signaling systems and other things. We also will be relaying rail at various points along the line, and again, these are significant investments. In the past, mostly what we've done is replace curb rail. We're finding ourselves in a situation now where tangent rail or straight track is also in need of replacement. One of the challenges that we have to overcome, and keep in mind that the railroad was rebuilt almost in its entirety after World War II. That means that everything's getting old at the same rate. And so if we don't start biting off this thing in incremental lumps pretty quick, the whole thing will reach maturity at one time, just as it did in 1945 and 1949 when when virtually the whole railroad was rebuilt following World War II. So what you can see is a lot of the work is being done between Palmer and Anchorage, and that is because every heavy load that we carry, be it oil, be it gravel, or coal, goes over that particular stretch of the line. So if you see a significant investment in one part of the railroad, and it may not be something that's close to you, don't be offended. That just happens to be where most of our ton miles are generated. The other areas of rehabilitation are largely in areas that are heavy curve territory.
So, Mr. Chairman, it's those points that are the orange dots that you're talking about.
Right.
For this.
That's correct. The orange dots actually were done in 1992, and the others are the ones that we're going to do in 1993. And I'm sorry, I didn't make that clear. I'm sorry. The orange dots were ones that we did in 1992. The yellow areas are the rehabilitation we intend to do in 1993, and then beyond that, we will catch it as the curb maintenance and other situations require. I also don't have on here that we rebuilt two tracks in Anchorage, in the Anchorage yard as well. Bridges, as you would guess, are a significant component of our business. They have to be inspected constantly, and it's an important requirement that they remain in tip-top shape. And here you can see, this is the 1992 and 93 bridge program. I only show that to you to illustrate that not everything is just rails, ties, and ballast. There's a lot of other very expensive construction work that is a lot of very expensive construction work of other types that has to be taken into account. And you see these two large yellow dots here. That's dock rehabilitation. The railroad owns and maintains the docks at Whittier, or most of the dock facilities at Whittier and Seward, and both are in need of cathodic protection. Both are in need of Whittier is in need of redecking, and Seward also has some deck problems, as well as some other rehabilitative work that's being done down there in preparation for the cruise line passengers coming on to Seward. Next is ballast and surfacing program. This is this has several different components to it. This is the 92 surfacing program, and the 163 miles that I mentioned that we had done. We have not yet determined precisely where we're going to do all of our surfacing for next year. Some of that is dependent upon how much the ground moved during the winter and the thaw. But nevertheless, this is a very significant portion of our maintenance program. This helps us with drainage. I mean, the biggest enemy that a railroad has is not the trucker, as many assume. It's water. And water can do more damage in less time to a railroad infrastructure than anything else that that you can possibly imagine. Resurfacing is extremely important in order to keep the integrity of the track up. If the roadbed gets soft, or if the roadbed becomes clouded with weeds and debris, it begins to accept water, it gets soft, and then the rails become uneven, and the trains will then, unfortunately, comply with the laws of gravity and derail. So we've got to stay ahead of that, and surfacing is a very, very important part of this. And then the tie program, which is on an annualized basis now, this past year, for 1992, we put in 14,600 ties.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
Just a minute. On resurfacing,
mm-hmm.
Is there any component you add to that resurfacing to impede vegetation growth on that? So I know you can't, or you're restricted on herbicide use now, and I know that weeds and brush cause a buildup of the moisture problem you're talking about. Is there anything that can be added that's legal to the base or the resurfacing that impedes vegetation growth that you care to talk about?
Yeah, right. Okay. No, actually, there is nothing that we do add that would comply, or there is nothing that we do add. There is, however, something you can take away, and that is dust and dirt. By using washed ballast instead of essentially mine run ballast, we get a lot of that dust and debris out of there, and it's a little more expensive to do that, but in the final analysis, it attracts less moisture and it becomes less of a haven or a home for weeds, which can then germinate. So we don't add, we take away, and there may come a time when addition is required. Let's see, the tie program, again, these are not insignificant programs. For 1992, we put in just under 15,000 ties. They run roughly $50 a piece installed. As you can see, in 1993, we intend to put in 20,000 wood ties and 5,000 curve ties. Those are steel ties that we use for our curve area, and that'll set us back just under $2 million.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Lincoln.
Along your line of questioning, then on the easement also on that, the tie, do you also, how do you clear all this brush back and keep that back from the tracks if you don't use herbicide? Is somebody out there chopping these?
Oh, yes. Weed? Yes, we have three different methods of doing that. We have some on-track equipment that has with it. It's called a brush cutter. And you're probably already right up to speed with me what it does. It has arms that extend from it that have large rotary blades that wholesale cut back the vegetation that impedes visibility and is beginning to encroach on the right-of-way and becoming a tripping hazard and what have you. We also hand manicure these things. Now, last year, we hired a platoon of prisoners from Palmer that were very effective at clearing the right-of-way between Palmer and Anchorage, which was just about their useful area. After that, it got too far. We couldn't take them far enough to make them useful. They spent more time in the car than they did clearing the weeds. And then the only other thing that's available to you is reballasting, which is in part what the 65,000 yards does. But a weed, if I may just take a moment, when a weed gets itself entrenched in a roadbed, the roots go down into the ballast and attract moisture. And when the moisture gets in there, it does two things. It'll either soften the roadbed and weaken the structure itself, or when it freezes up, it expands and causes frost heaves. All of these things are a problem for the equipment and all the rest. But worse yet, it creates visibility problems for our crews trying to inspect the train. And even worse than that, in my mind, it creates a tripping hazard for our employees as they have to get out and deal with whatever they may have to deal with on the line. When you get vines and alder and all the rest there in the middle of the night, and that's when we run trains, unfortunately, that becomes an extremely hazardous position for our people. So we are desperately seeking a solution that is both economical and effective to increase the safety of our operation. And that has not been an easy task, as you know. It's anytime you mention vegetation control, you solicit the interest of all sorts of people, which is absolutely justified. But nevertheless, we have not yet found a. We found that hand manicuring really doesn't work because you only take the top of the weed off, and you still leave the roots behind. They spring up an hour after you're gone. When you've got 16, 18 hours of daylight, those things will grow like weeds. It gets very thick very quickly. So hand manicure doesn't work. We've got to get the roots out somehow, and we haven't gotten to the bottom of that just yet. I think at this point, I will deal for a couple of minutes on some of the... I'll sit back down if I can figure out. Yeah. I'll deal for just a couple of minutes on some of the freight car and locomotive acquisition activities that we will undertake. And then if you have an interest in things that I haven't mentioned, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
A couple of questions first. What's the difference between 70-ton rail and 115-ton rail?
Rail is measured in weight per 3 feet. 70-pound rail, there's nothing magical to it. A 3-foot section of 70-pound rail weighs 70 pounds. It has much less steel in it. It's really a measure of how much steel you're supporting your track structure with. Industry standard in the lower 48 right now is 136-pound ribbon rail, 136 to 142-pound. The Alaska Railroad Corporation uses 115-pound jointed rail. It's more than adequate for the level of business that we enjoy. And welded rail, though it has a lot of very good points to it, also brings with it some requirements that we're not able to meet. It brings with it some track structure requirements in terms of the quality of the surfacing and the ballast that we just don't have available to us here in Alaska. Thermal expansion and contraction, you can imagine, in the Fairbanks area where...
Okay, thanks.
All right. Sorry.
But yeah. There's all different kinds of rails. I mean, from, 30-pound on...
Well, you won't find it... I don't think there's anything less than 115-pound rail being rolled anywhere in America today. Now, somebody can probably find some 90 being rolled someplace, but it would be for light rail use, trolley systems and the like, not for freight or heavy rail. As far as freight car acquisitions are concerned, actually, I just signed the AFE for this the other day. We're going to spend $600,000 acquiring coal hoppers to support the North End coal operation. We will be consistently rolling in between 25 and 30 new coal hoppers each year for the foreseeable future. We also are undertaking, this is not reflected in this document right here, but we are undertaking a review of our entire rolling stock fleet. There is no polite way for me to say that that our freight car fleet right now is largely inadequate for our needs and it's too old. And we've got to address the problem. The way we're addressing the problem is to assess what businesses we're in now, assess what businesses we are likely to be in the near future. We've invited our customers to participate, both those that we have lost, those that we have now, and those that we are trying to get. And we are going to, functionally, what we're going to end up doing is scrapping virtually everything we've got right now and going out and leasing many fewer pieces of equipment, but those that are much more flexible, have interchangeable parts, common-sized wheels. We're able to convert them quickly from hauling pipe to hauling timber to hauling other things. This is something that is desperately needed. I hope we'll get it done this year. We may not. We'll certainly be well down the road at the end of this year in deciding what it is we're going to do. It's a rather complex situation, but one that absolutely has to be addressed. We're also remodeling several of our passenger coaches in anticipation of the increased ridership that we hope to get between Seward and Anchorage and Fairbanks. So we've got five older but perfectly viable passenger coaches that are going to be, we're going to put new upholstery, new floors, paint them up, and make them attractive for our passenger operations. And then as far as real estate is concerned, the only capital projects that we have for this year, and I don't think I have any plan actually written down after 93, but this year we will spend roughly $1 million bringing utilities and other amenities to two parcels, one in Fairbanks, one in an 80-acre parcel on the Chena River, and the other is a parcel of land in Anchorage over on Viking Boulevard that we have two, a moving company and a trucking company that want to locate over there. So we're going to fix that property up there so they can put their facilities together.
Is that served by rail?
No, actually it's not. I think it is. Viking served by rail?
Pardon?
Is Viking served by rail? It's not, is it? I didn't think so. No. I may be leaving something out, but I run the risk of taking up too much of your time with details that you're not terribly interested in, so I have a feeling there would be some questions, unless there's something in here that you want me to go over in more detail.
I have a question from Senator Lincoln and then from Senator Kelly.
Actually, on page 31 and 32, the 80 acres that you're talking about in Fairbanks, mm-hmm. That land is across from the Alaska land.
That's correct.
Is that where it is?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And
it's Pega Road.
Then if I go down here, then you're saying that 80 acres is for a passenger termination? I mean, excuse me, terminal relocation? Is that the same?
That's what it says there, yes. But that is a decision that we have not made yet. But it would that may be a component of that. We are making the property available for development. There is interest in locating a hotel there. There has been some talk of relocating the passenger depot there. We have had marginal interest registered and people wanting to put various sorts of attractions and restaurants on that piece of property. The fundamental thing we're trying to say here is that we are going to prepare that piece of property for development. The relocation of the passenger depot is a rather complex thing. We are in the and it's the sort of problem that in a way you'd like to have. Our passenger train, our daily Denali Express train, has become too large to fit in the current Fairbanks depot. Right now we're hanging out in the street. We have to cut the tour company cars off in the middle of the yard and let passengers off in the middle of the freight yard, which is not a good long-term idea. And in the mornings when we depart, we end up loading the baggage out in the street in Phillips Field Road. So it will relocate, but we have not decided yet where it's going to relocate. We've been dealing with the community. We've been talking to the Chena River. There's a group called the Chena River Commission, I believe it is, that we've been speaking to about this. The downtown people have an awful lot to say about it. There are several opportunities. Some of them we may not have thought about. I know there was one suggestion that we close, or that the stub of Phillips Field Road, I don't know how familiar you are with the area, the stub of Phillips Field Road be closed and use that. I'm not sure that'll work because the Department of Transportation has some plans for a connector there that may interfere with. I'm not sure that it will. That's one aspect we're looking at.
So do I understand you correctly that the railroad will put in the water, sewer, electric distribution lines prior to knowing what you're going to put on there, whether it's going to be a hotel, whether it's going to be a...
Yes, we'll bring utilities to the property, yes.
Whether you're going to use that or not.
That's right. We're preparing it for development. That is, we have significant interest being shown in that property. We've already lost one for the Princess Hotel that is currently built out by the airport. Would have been built on that parcel had we had water and electric and the rest to it. And this is something we've been working with the community of Fairbanks with. And we have not spent the money yet. This is a plan. But we do intend to prepare the land for development.
Mr. Chairman, I have two other questions unrelated to that particular question.
Go ahead, proceed.
The other question that I had was on the regulations that are being imposed now by the feds on providing handicap access and et cetera. I see that in here you had expansion for wheelchair lifts, but are there other portions of the regulations that are being handed down that might affect the railroad industry?
With the design of right now we have to redesign or design in as we remodel our passenger coaches to handle to allow handicap access. As an industry issue, that is probably the biggest one. But then again, when you look at the industry, you're really talking about Amtrak in North America. So it's really largely focused between the Alaska Railroad and Amtrak in the United States. Other commute facilities or commute light rail, inner city.
But are you looking then at these regulations that are being imposed?
Oh, absolutely. That's why we're in a new office building. That's why we're in a new headquarters building, or a large part of why we're in a new headquarters building in Anchorage. And we are also, as we speak, we're knocking out the bathrooms in the depot in Anchorage and getting that done. We have to do the same thing, I'm reasonably sure. I'm speaking from memory, in Fairbanks, and I know we do in Denali.
Well, I was just thinking, not so much as the stable building facility, but for the train itself, that not only getting the wheelchair lifts, but that access once you get on that train.
Yeah, the bathrooms are the bathrooms on our new equipment are handicap access.
So you
design.
Don't need to.
The new stuff, no. The older equipment does have to have some handicap work done to it if we're going to use it exclusively on a train.
And then lastly, on your underground storage tank replacement. You note here that underground tanks were removed, but you're putting in money to replace the underground fuel storage tanks. What are in Seward and Fairbanks? What are you using now if they've already been removed and they haven't been replaced?
That's an excellent question. we buy fuel from local vendors in Seward and in Whittier. For fueling locomotives. Actually, we try not to do that because it's more expensive at outlying points. We use above-ground tanks right now, but I think what's being referred to is we've got money in the budget for the coming year to acquire them, and we've already taken them out. And as silly as it sounds, I can't answer your question, but I'll get an answer for you. But I suspect we're just buying our fuel direct from a jobber until we get the above-ground tanks done.
Senator Kelp?
Yeah.
You got your mic on, Senator?
On your five-year plan, your analysis of the Alaska economy is a little bleak at the beginning, yet you indicate in your planning period, your five-year planning period, that you're going to increase revenues every year. How does that work?
Well, there are two ways to increase revenues. One is to raise your rates, and there's a limit to what you can do there and remain competitive. And the other is to broaden our base of the source of our revenue. Excuse me. If you think about it, I guess about 65, almost 70% of our revenue is focused comes from petroleum-related activities or coal-related activities. That's quite focused. There are other areas, however, that we think we can substantially increase revenue, and that is by helping to develop the timber, log and timber export on the rail belt. We've had several discussions with Menasha and a couple of other outfits to develop wood chip export operations. We have an interest in perhaps handling solid waste. That is something that is a natural for a railroad. What we intend to do is get a little of that from market share, get a little of that from, or a lot of it from new business activities, and some from rate increases. And of course, in terms of our net income, along with all of that, at the same time, you got to figure out how to reduce your expenses.
And you have contracts coming up, huh?
That's 3 years out, or excuse me, 2 years out now.
Okay, under your real estate portion, I don't understand this. Permit revenues are expected to increase significantly due to new pipeline appraisal process beginning in the fourth quarter of 1992.
Right.
What does that mean?
Well, we have several pipelines and other. We lease our right of way. It has significant value as a corridor. We have a lease with Alascom for fiber optics. We have a lease from NSTAR for a pipeline that they run down towards Girdwood on our right of way. We have several other similar leases. What we are doing is reevaluating the value of those leases. And
gotcha. Has Robert Anderson been around to see you yet?
Not yet, but I read something in the paper that he probably will be dropping by.
That'll be an interesting visit, won't it? Butt cars,
yes, sir.
Girdwood. That sounds like a heck of an idea to me. I read that in the paper this morning. I really like that idea.
No.
If we can do anything to help you out, why don't you let us know?
Well, we may be by see it. That is something that we've been working on really for some time. The Cebu Corporation has been interested in developing a commute operation on that leg for a while. We think it makes sense. We think we can bring something to the table in terms of getting the school kids out of the buses and off the highway and on a stable roadbed and help take automobiles off of that very busy stretch of highway.
What kind of cost are you talking about? I mean, you know, investment cost to start up.
Some of that has to be, is yet to be determined, but it's relative to other things that are done, it may not be all that expensive. In that, there is already a bus transfer facility at Diamond. Relative to other things you do, building a some form of access to the rail that is handicap access is not a frightfully expensive proposition. We're not
interested. $1 million?
Yeah, probably. I hate to get into that because I might be overlooking some ground problem that
You run a rail off the main line?
No, we just load right off the main.
Oh, you're that close to the
rest?
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's only a couple, I'd say probably.
Well, sure, it looked like a great idea. Finally, last question, your pension system, you know, how mm-hmm. how solid is that?
It's overfunded. It's managed by an outfit called Columbia Trust. I don't have, I certainly can get for you because you ask, I don't have with me any specific numbers, but we are overfunded to some extent, and it's been growing. The fund itself, apart from contributions, has been growing at about 8% as a running average, and I'll get you some.
No, I actually don't need the figures. I'm not looking to rate it. I just want to make sure it's sound. Because,
yes.
You know, we're all concerned about that. Ms. Bellman-Anker is in deep trouble in their budget system, so. We're in pretty good shape, but they'll tell you anything you want to hear around here. So, but that satisfies me.
We also, I might say, we have an independent consultant that helps us look at it. We have a board that consists of union people and ourselves, and management, and then we have an outside outfit that kind of helps us watch the store.
Mr. Chairman, I've got another appointment after that I've got to run. So.
Okay. I have a question or two on the on the five-year plan. It shows, looks like cash generation, for instance, 93, when you take the net plus add back to non-cash depreciation, you've come up with about $8 million.
What page are you on, Mr. Chairman?
Page 10. And 94, where you generate about $12 million cash flow and $13 million. So it looks like you're generating enough to pay the $11 million a year you're saying you're committing to for
right.
$1 million for real estate development, $10 million. So cash flow looks fairly solid. What I guess one of the purposes of this hearing was the fact that there's a lot of inquiries. From different areas of the state, Seward, Fairbanks, Anchorage, regarding your five-year plan. And I see in your five-year real estate, particularly in the real estate plan, with the acreages that you, the railroad owns, it certainly behooves you to develop it as much as you can to generate revenues to facilitate business with the railroad and to help pay for the capital improvements. And I know the concerns I've heard is frankly, hotel development in Seward, possibilities. I read that in the paper, as well as inquiries right after it's in the paper. In the same way, Fairbanks, and I guess I have no problem with that, unless, of course, the railroad gets involved in a debt equity situation. Then it becomes a concern of mine, because I think ultimately, when you go partners with someone, if they do go belly up, you're responsible in your equity situation, paying off the balance of the debt, and that is a liability that does not go away. And obviously, you try to pick the best partners with the best financial record and balance sheet you can. But past hotel business, at least in Alaska, sometimes two or three of them have to go bankrupt before anyone can make a profit on that building. So. Because of the high cost per room. And that's a sad state of affairs, but that's the way it looked like it developed over the last 15 years in a lot of the major buildings, hotel businesses in Alaska. I guess in your five-year plan on page 31, I don't see any massive anticipation of capital outlay, and I don't see your projection for your debt going up payment now, unless it's a, these would be in separate corporations, which I don't think they would be. I would hope they wouldn't be. I would hope that all the debt expansion or debt repayment or anything like that would show in here, and it doesn't show anything major, but I guess that's a concern that's been expressed to me by other people and also brought my attention to it. And I know that the arrangement in Anchorage is a equity situation of some sort. I understand. I don't know the details. But what's the plan for Fairbanks and or Seward if you get involved with hotel development on railroad property?
Okay. Actually, I'd be happy to answer that. You're right. It has been a highly visible thing, at least in my world, for the last couple of weeks. And the key word in your question is if, because that is the if a hotel is in our future. And the reason I say that is this: 2 years ago or thereabouts, we started to talk, or somebody came in to see us about the development of a hotel in Anchorage. They were going to build a hotel. Did we have some property that was available? They'd read about Ship Creek, et cetera, et cetera. We showed them a parcel that they found to be attractive, and they, having already been armed with their market studies and other data that's required for this sort of thing, they looked at it and said, fine, that's a good piece of property. Subsequently, they said, well, would you like to participate in this thing? And we subsequently did. I might add that in the process of doing that, we knew we were changing somewhat from, we were in the process of evolving from somewhat of a reactive, certainly under federal ownership, a reactive mode of our real estate. If somebody came into the door in federal days and said we'd like to lease a parcel of ground, somebody would say, yeah, fine, sure, here, go ahead. Well, under state ownership, it's become more aggressive. We are now going out looking for people to develop our property because it's an important source of income. In any event, we did elect to participate with them. What we did was take the net present value of our lease and put it towards the hotel. And the hotel partnership has gone out and acquired its financing. It pays taxes. It does all of the things that any other partnership in Anchorage, Fairbanks, or anywhere else in the United States of America would do. This past year, we paid a total of, or it paid a total of $127,000 in taxes. It's only been open about 6 months. I have been uniformly inaccurate in predicting what will and what won't be controversial in what we do. But we did know we were charting new waters with the hotel, so we brought it to the boards and the public's attention in one board meeting, discussed it thoroughly, and the announcement was made. A lot of print developed as a result in the newspapers. We scheduled a second board meeting 6 weeks or more later. And it was felt that during that time period we'd receive public comment and all the rest, and then we'd have a subsequent board meeting at which time people would come in and tell us what they thought about the idea. We held that board meeting and nobody came. In any event, the deal was okay and we went on. And there was a lot of controversy over that. Well, we know that there is interest in doing a hotel in Fairbanks. We're unsure whether we want to have a position in this thing or not. We haven't made any sort of a decision. But we decided we'd approach this one a little bit differently based on what occurred before. We thought what we'd do is ask local people if they wanted to participate and inform everybody of what we were doing. As a result, we've had meetings with the Fairbanks Hotel and Motel Owners Association, and we invited in the course of explaining what the parameters of our deal in Anchorage were. We also invited any of their members to participate. We'd like to have a local person from Fairbanks have at least a part of whatever is done. We think that's important. That's a component we didn't have or we didn't think of in our Comfort Inn in Anchorage thing. We went beyond that, and we've gone in public meetings that were attended by 70 or more people of the Chena River Commission. We made our announcements there. We've been to the board of the Chamber of Commerce. I've made several addresses to large groups, be they those who attended our luncheon in Fairbanks as part of our board meeting, or the Chamber of Commerce and Rotary. There are several that all of us speak to occasionally. It's something widely known. We're asking for local participation in whatever occurs here. but there's something that that needs to be recognized. And the first is, we have no deal on the table. There's no formal proposal that has been given to us. One was, it was from our partner in Anchorage, and it was unacceptable. So we told them to get, you know, get out and get back in line. We're going to review the next one. I think they thought that, well, we know these guys, this won't be any problem. They'll just accept whatever we give them, and that wasn't the case. So they're now back third in line, I guess, or second or third in line, depending upon where they are. But we have no formal proposal on the table. If there is a formal proposal that comes to the table, we have no reason to think right now that we will be, well, we have no reason to think or not think that we will be, a, or assume that we will be invited to participate. If we are invited to participate, there is no reason to assume right now that it's going to be a good deal for us. And even if management is invited to participate and it assumes it's going to be a good deal, we still have a board of directors that has to review that decision and take in, not take into account not only the fiduciary end of the thing, but the other aspects as well. So, and the same situation exists in Seward. We invited Brad Snowden, who is the owner of the Best Western down there in Seward. We've already asked him if he'd like to participate in something down in Seward. Seward, frankly, right now doesn't pencil from what we can determine. That I am convinced will change when the cruise, when everybody really fully absorbs the impact of the cruise lines coming into Seward. But right now, it doesn't pencil. You couldn't get anybody to even propose. But we did invite Brad to participate, and we're not sneaking up on anybody. There is one other hotel down there, and I don't know whether we have discussed anything with them or not, but there's no reason why we wouldn't. I hope I'm answering your question and setting about that we're not going about this with the idea. We didn't get up in the morning and say, hey, let's simultaneously make everybody in Fairbanks mad and build a hotel. This is something that we've that we're looking at and trying to involve the other people. The problem that we run into is, and there's no polite way to say it, those who are there would just as soon not have any hotel built for any reason by anybody. And the fact that we may be involved in it gives gives somebody an opportunity to cathart, if you will, about the competitive situation.
Thank you. That explains a lot of the situation. I think more than it has been, and we're all hearing the same story at the same time, not losing a lot in the translation from several other people. I guess my concern would still remain on not so much seeking out developers, but still the question of becoming a partner in an equity holder in hotels or any other anything else except for the rail transportation business. I think causes some consternation among not only citizens but among some legislators anyway.
Yeah.
As far as the hotel site Fairbanks, I do wish you well on that because it is a great site for a hotel located across from Alaskaland, and I think with the growth we're experiencing and we'll continue in tourism, I think it'll be an asset to the city. But I was, the rest of these state agencies seem to, when they lease out property or land, they get the highest lease price plus a fixed concession fee on any gross. And I don't even know if that's possible. You people have been looking at it a lot more, but I think that has been the standard of not getting involved in an equity situation by other agencies, realizing you are an autonomous corporation, but still backed by the credit of the state, as I understand it, in cases.
Actually, no, we're not. The law specifically indicates, and the wordage is here, and Mark probably has one with him, but that we are, the state specifically does not stand behind any debt that we accrue or any legal obligations that we may, the way it's worded, it's words to the effect of, we are legally and financially independent from the state. We're very clear about that in writing the act, to make sure that nothing, anything that the railroad did would come back up and affect the financial stability of the state.
My other point is the $400,000 for utility extension to the 80 acres. Being in the utility business, that seems awful. For 30 years, that seems awful low. And I was just in the electric business, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm sure it'll get it to the site, but how far into the site, I would question. But that's just our comment.
But may I say one thing, if I may, just as part of the discussion on the one of the fundamental concepts about our real estate development is that it must relate to the core business, which is transportation. That is a matter of policy management. That is a matter of policy of the board. We're not going to go out and go into some unrelated business that means nothing to us. The hotel business, the railroad historically has been in the hotel business. We had a hotel at Curry. We had a some of the other, anybody can help me here, we had
McKinley.
We had several in the old, so there is, and it directly affects our ability to put passengers into our own passenger equipment, and that is one of the and that is why that particular business was one that was attractive to us as opposed to some of the other things.
I just say Curry was there because it took 2 days to get to Fairbanks, and I think that's the reason Curry was there. It wasn't, and that was accommodation that is no longer required logistically, let's put it that way. The other area, I'll just finish on expanding beyond transportation. Rail transportation concerns me because everyone else in that business is private enterprise, and that may be, extend beyond your developing your property and real estate, but still be, quote, transportation. But how far that authorization or authority goes beyond rail transportation and property development of the 40,000 acres or whatever it is you have, I think could be questioned. For instance, rail barge, trucking, there's a lot of transportation that you mentioned earlier that's nibbling at you, and maybe a situation that might entice you into getting involved in that, those other type of operations. I just would hope that you continue to keep the legislature advised as you have, and I will compliment you on meeting with me several months ago and talking about the different plans and the railroad. I appreciate being kept up to date instead of getting behind the power curve, so to speak. Senator Lincoln?
Thank you. I have several questions, but some of the response could be in writing.
Okay.
It doesn't have to. I know we're short on time, but one is I'd be interested to see the leases that the Alaska Railroad has for the land leases, who they're with.
I'm not sure, we any specific ones or all of them, because we've got...
How many do you have?
Thousands.
Yeah. Pages and pages and pages?
Yeah, really. Thousands of leases.
I guess major.
I'm only wanting to get what you want. I mean, how do you want...
Well, I don't want hundreds of pages, but your major.
Okay. If I may.
And also, no, that's okay, because I've got more important questions here. One is that I can see that, you know, if you guys get in trouble, it's at your own fault, because there's not one woman in this board of directors here. And your officers is only barely a fifth women. So I just point that out to you. And going on, the Wishbone Hill, in your the financial report, it says here, and if you could just speak to it, that according to the current agreement, the railroad is to refund the $9 million plus interest earned during the holding period if Wishbone Hill coal project is canceled.
That's right.
If you could just briefly explain what that is, and also, let's see, one other question. Oh. Self-insurance. I noticed that there's self-insurance in here, and you noted that the continued increases in healthcare costs will negatively impact the railroad's net income.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if those two kind of go hand in hand, if you are self-insured.
Well, we are self-insured for workman's compensation.
Workman's compensation.
our health insurance, using the term insurance, I think, is using it loosely. It's really a cooperative. It's managed. It's our own money managed by Aetna, and our employees contribute in 1993 based on what actuarially occurred in 1992. And it's our costs. We have two separate plans. One for labor.
You don't have a fixed payment for employees.
No.
We
didn't give it up. It's fixed, but it changes. Well, it's fixed for the employees, but it's fixed. But each time we go around for labor negotiations, it increased. It increased the last time. I don't remember the dollar amount, but just to give you a case in point for management, the cost of health insurance went up from 1993 as opposed to 1992 30%. And that would mean that a family of four or more would be paying $3,700 a year in health insurance premiums over and above what the corporate contribution has been. It's a significant hit. So, and we've had to cut back our benefits significantly as a result. What we have is probably, I'm unhappy to say that we are probably on the cusp of the wave of the future, in that our insurance now for management could only be considered catastrophic insurance. We have no dental, we have no audio, we have no visual. Essentially, what we've got is $1,000 per head deductible, and
per family member.
Per family member, up to $3,000. It's a tough world out there when you're a small company trying to get insurance, and. The labor organizations had a good year in that theirs only went up 2%.
Okay, and Wishbone.
Wishbone, okay, sure. The history of the money, which I think you may know, is that it was an equipment grant to Idemitsu Kosan, which is a Japanese company that was going to open the mine, or is going to open the mine, at Sutton for the export of coal to Japan. It was a $9 million grant. I don't remember the year that it was put in place.
1990.
Thank you, 1990. And it is in the custody of the Alaska Railroad Corporation in secure investments until such time as they go online and we acquire equipment to export the coal. The thought behind it was that if the cost of equipment has to be recognized in the rate for transporting coal from Sutton to Seward, the replacement of equipment, we just couldn't be competitive. And in 1990, the legislature collectively voted to put this money aside for that purpose. We are the custodians of it. It's invested in two CDs. It's now worth about $11 million. And we're anxiously awaiting this resolution of the mental health lands issue so that the Wishbone Hill mine can open.
So in the financial statement then, the $9 million is rather held in trust. That's dry interest. That if that is canceled for any reason, it's not going to the bottom line as
no 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 no. It we would refund it plus interest back to the state.
If I may, I've been watching the teleconference for anyone wishing to testify and failed to look at the sign-up sheet here. We do have one other person that would like to testify. I believe Tim Cerny.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Does that mean I'm done?
You're done for now. Don't go away. Tim Cerny. Sorry, Tim. No problem. I didn't get you in.
Glad you got me in. I'm Tim Cerny. I'm from Fairbanks, Alaska. Do I read my address? Okay. I'm here to address the hotel issue as it impacts my company in Fairbanks and I believe the Fairbanks community. And I'm here to speak against the railroad's construction or participation, direct participation in a joint venture in the Fairbanks community. The use of a joint venture by the railroad to enter into the hotel business is really an act of the government coming in to the private sector, kind of semi-cloaked. And it has some advantages that the private sector does not have these advantages, the ones with financing in the Fairbanks community, in the Fairbanks area today. If you don't have tremendously deep pockets, it's almost impossible to obtain financing. The area of debt levels and costs, the advantage of owning property and using property as an equity tool to participate or obtain financing and lower construction costs also provides a lower debt service and some advantages to whatever this equity partnership is. The operation of a hotel in the Fairbanks community at this time is not essential to the operation of the railroad. In fact, the railroad, I'm correct in the statement that the railroad currently holds a block for the summer of 1993 of 5 rooms per night to handle all of their needs for tours related to the railroad itself. Certainly a 100-room hotel is not necessary to handle their current needs. It's extremely difficult for the private sector to make good decisions when you have a state agency competing in the private sector. I'd like to kind of review maybe just briefly a few things that occurred with the Ship Creek project, because I think that that's indicative of what we could see in the Fairbanks community with respect to an equity participation. My information is obtained from the audit report done by the Division of Legislative Audit on May 1st, 1992. It's been very difficult for us to get good information as to what happened. This document does contain lots of good information with respect to how the project went, who participated, what kind of cash contributions were made, and what happened with respect to the project. Specifically, with respect to the hotel construction, not the overall development of the Ship Creek project, this was set up with a group who was to take a 60% interest, with the railroad taking a 40% interest in exchange for the 35-year lease on 1.7 acres of property. It's drawn under a partnership agreement in which all partners have unlimited liability with respect to any debt or borrowings of the partnership. The railroad threw in the lease. The partners were to throw in $250,000 in cash for their 60% interest, as well as their contribution toward construction and development. I assume this is with respect to administrative work. When it came down and the project was to be built, the $250,000 was not forthcoming, yet the project went ahead anyway. It went ahead in spite of the fact that the primary contractor for the construction was also an investor in the Invest partnership, meaning he was an investor in the 60% interest. There was a failure to produce a cash requirement, meaning there was essentially no risk for the 60% interest. And the ultimate managing partner of this corporation and the president of the managing partner of the managing entity was also had an ownership interest in the 60% that was to be held by these partners. So effectively, we've got an equity group, an equity partnership, wherein the only partner who performed was the railroad by putting up the lease. The other partners failed to perform with respect to cash infusions, had no risk, yet were the decision makers with respect to construction risk and management risk, and continue to make those decisions on a daily basis as to how the project operates. It's written in the partnership agreement that the managing company of the hotel and the manager of that managing company is the individual who chooses or decides as to whether cash draws are necessary, equity contributions by other partners. I wouldn't, as a private sector investor, make an investment of this kind. I would make sure that there were a series of catches to make sure that my interests were protected. What I see, if the same vehicle was employed in Fairbanks, that ultimately this will result in the railroad ownership of this hotel. We run three hotel properties in Fairbanks. We spent quite a bit of time reviewing the possibility of new construction in the Fairbanks area. Taking into account the fact that we have a 100-day season, we estimate that the cost of a new hotel property or on this property would run between $45,000 and $50,000 per room. Not taking into account the land cost, assuming there's no land cost. We estimate that you cannot service in Fairbanks today in excess of $25,000 in debt. These numbers don't pencil. This does not work. What this would result in is the eventual ownership of the entire equity partnership by the railroad. And we would expect that this will happen, that this could possibly happen in the Anchorage case. It will certainly happen in Fairbanks if the same vehicle was employed. In conclusion, we're not against development. We believe that the private sector should handle development. We believe that the railroad should develop its property. It's a beautiful site. But the railroad should put the property up for sale or should put it out in the market at a lease rate. We feel if the railroad feels the property is worth $6 a foot, they would lease the property at a return of 8% a year or 9% a year. Advertise this. Allow fair competition within the market. And if there aren't successful bids, accept that as a message. If there are successful bids, work with them. That concludes my comments.
Since you are in the, I assume you're in the builder.
That's correct.
Construction and operating hotel business. That being the case, are you saying that there's an indication or a great possibility that the profit made off of the Ship Creek project was made in the construction, which is financed by debt?
That's correct.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Lincoln.
Thank you. I didn't get Mr. Cerny, and I apologize, who you represent.
Fountainhead Development. We're a property management firm in Fairbanks, Alaska.
And when you said that you have three hotel properties, would you mind telling me which?
Sophie Station Hotel, Bridgewater Hotel, and Wedgwood Manor. We operate those three properties.
I guess I share some of your concern, and I mentioned to some of the individuals that were here for the railroad industry last evening that. I'd like to see us not be in competition with private industry. That I think that the private industry should be the ones to, if there's money to be made, and especially in the tourism industry, that I would just very much hate to see us as Alaska Railroad getting into competition with private industry. And I know that it has been in the past for the Alaska Railroad to lease out large blocks of the land, and I don't know, I still have a little bit of a concern that Alaska Railroad, whether 400,000 is a small amount and just gets you onto the property, I think that, you know, if that piece of property is going to be developed, work it out with the private industry to put in whatever utilities that they so desire. But I that's just my personal opinion, and I'd like to see us just manage a railroad. But I appreciate your testimony, and I apologize, Mr. Chairman, but I too have to leave for another appointment.
Okay, I would remind you before you leave, Tuesday is a bill that may interest you, SB 82, Dalton Highway.
Oh, no, that doesn't.
See you Tuesday. Thank you. Tim Cerny. I have a person in Anchorage that would like to ask a question, if he's still there. Frank Dillon, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here, and thank you very much for the opportunity. We've been under the impression there were some statements made, Mr. Hatfield made, and perhaps we can clear up a misunderstanding. The trucking industry was under the impression that the Alaska Railroad was not fully insured, and that if it was to have a catastrophic recommends spill liability insurance and remediation insurance. If that's not true, I would sure appreciate hearing about it. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Mr. Hatfield, you
yes.
care to respond?
Frank, would you, if I may, Mr. Chairman, Frank, would you ask me the question again, please, because I want to make sure there are several different types of insurance we have, and I got to make sure that we get the answer right.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hatfield, what I was interested in is that does the Alaska Railroad, in fact, have environmental remediation insurance, that is, to clean up and fix up property in case of a catastrophic discharge of petroleum products? And does the railroad carry the standard, what is usually an industry standard in transportation, $5 million policies for hazardous material spill or discharge liability insurance?
Mr. Chairman, I plead guilty to not being fully conversant with all of the nuances of our insurance policy. But Frank, we have a catastrophic insurance policy with I think it's a $5 million self-insured reserve, and then we have a $10 million line of credit that we have with various financial institutions to cover any sort of a catastrophic event. I am not aware, though I'm going to research it, and I'll get you an answer, and I'll get an answer for the committee, of any rail carrier on the planet that has spill liability insurance. It's virtually not obtainable. They're not obtainable at a price that any of us can afford. When I came on board, I looked at that very thoroughly with the Dunbar experience, which was a $6 million hit, freshly in my mind. We are also working, though, with our, one of the things we can do and are doing, and I'm not in a position to divulge the fine points of it, but we are asking some of our customers to recognize the liability of the products they sell, the products they ship, and we may get them to participate in some of the liability that may occur in the event of an accident. And Frank, I know the question you're asking, and I just don't have the information with me.